all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. It is September here is National Suicide Prevention Month, so we want to bring to you the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 800-273-8255. As you know, about 22 veterans a day commit suicide. It's a horrible statistic and a situation that's totally unacceptable. So we want to encourage you to kind of keep an eye out for your brothers and sisters who served. And if you can prevent a suicide, you're doing God's work. That National Suicide Prevention is 800-273-8255. And the Veterans Crisis Line, run by VA, you dial 988, then press 1 for 24/7 confidential crisis support for veterans and their loved ones. So let's all do our part here in September during National Suicide Prevention Month. We want to welcome here on Veterans Radio Kate Melcher. Kate is a board member for Veterans Radio America, and she's going to tell us about radio on the river. But before we get there, I should mention that Kate graduated from the University of Arizona and spent some time doing different interesting jobs in Washington, D.C., and then joined the United States Army, spent about 7.5 years in the Army, learned how to fly helicopters and became a helicopter pilot, and has, in her current role, she's the executive director of Fisher House Michigan for about almost 6 years now, helping bring funding in to create Fisher Houses both in Ann Arbor and in Detroit, Michigan, near VA medical centers. So, Kate, with all your veteran-centric work, we really appreciate that you're helping out Veterans Radio and being on its board.
Well, it's a pleasure to get to do this, and thanks again for inviting me to be on the radio with you today. We always have great conversation.
We do, and we're going to focus it here on the first ever fundraiser for Veterans Radio. Tell me about Radio on the River.
So I have found, you know, in the 6 years working for Fisher House, that the thing that every veteran wants to tell is their story. You know, Veterans Radio has been all about, you know, capturing the oral history and, you know, veteran storytelling in a place where, you know, that wasn't always acceptable. So Radio on the River is actually a place where we can continue that veteran storytelling conversation. We are meeting in Ann Arbor over on Huron River, and it'll be a nice sort of garden party in the afternoon where we get to hear from some pretty amazing veterans. It'll be rather casual. It's not a big stage and not a big production, but it's a place where you can have a conversation with a World War II veteran, with a Navy veteran who was the skipper the squadron of F-18s that were just doing training exercises on 9/11 when they got scrambled to go be the first F-18s on station. You know, we've got all kinds of folks that are going to be telling these sorts of stories, and it's in an intimate setting. You get to have one-on-one conversation with these folks, and it's just a wonderful way to learn more about our veterans, their service, and how they continue their service now that they've taken the uniform off.
Well, and it's going to be done in a backyard, as you say, garden party kind of setting, casual. There'll be some food, there'll be some drinks, some silent auction, and discussions with a lot of soulmates for many of us.
Yes, indeed.
So I think it's a great way in which to support Veterans Radio, which has been telling America veterans stories for now going on 19 years. Dale and his compatriots were doing this when it wasn't at all popular, and so it's really great to keep this institution, if you will, going. If people are interested in either coming to Radio on the River or supporting Veterans Radio America, how do they go about doing this, Kate?
Well, the easiest way is to go to veteransradio.net. If you navigate there, the very first thing on our website is going to be Radio on the River. And you can click through. You can buy tickets to Radio on the River. You can become a company sponsor. Or you can just make a donation to support. This is in Michigan, in Ann Arbor. So you know, we have listeners all over the country. And whether or not you can actually make it to Ann Arbor on September 25th, you still have the opportunity to support. At the end of the event, we're going to be doing a live broadcast. So for the folks who can't be in Michigan, you'll also get the opportunity to participate with some of our storytellers from that afternoon.
And this is an afternoon event, as you say. It'll be Sunday, September 25th from 2 to 5 p.m., and at 5 p.m. the live radios will go on, and more of these stories will be aired both on AM and FM radio, as well as ultimately getting posted on the Internet. One of the cool things I heard somebody wanting to do in terms of support from out of state was saying, hey, I'm going to buy a ticket, but I want you to find a veteran or a student veteran and donate that ticket to them. So that's a cool way to participate too, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, we have a very active student veteran population at the University of Michigan and at Washtenaw Community College and at Michigan State. But, you know, we were all college students once, and, you know, maybe a ticket to this event was a little bit out of reach, but sponsoring a ticket for those student veterans is a great way to get a younger generation involved. You know, I'm a post 9/11 vet, but I'm one of the more senior ones. So it would be really great to have folks even younger than me, that have served or are still serving, getting them involved early on in the culture of veteran storytelling. Veteran storytelling is how we take care of each other. It's how we process trauma in some cases. It's how we learn about benefits. It's all of these things. And having our younger generation of veterans start to gather like this in ways that we haven't quite been successful in doing at Legions and other places, you know, here's an opportunity for them to gather outside on the river, a beautiful Sunday afternoon. We'll feed them, we'll give them some drinks, and we'll listen to some great veteran storytelling.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful opportunity to support Veterans Radio America. As I say, it's been on the air for 19 years. Not always been popular to be on the air, and it costs a little money to keep it up, although this is primarily a passion project for everybody involved. So it's Radio on the River, September 25th. You can go to veteransradio.net and click on the banner and support the cause, or buy a ticket and show up. We'd love to have you. Or donate a ticket, a very cool idea. Kate, anything else you want to pass along to our listeners?
I'm just excited to see folks on Sunday the 25th. Veteransradio.net is a great place to start. Whether you can join us that day or not, there's always a ton of information and other veteran storytelling always available on our veteransradio.net and via our podcasts. So we look forward to seeing you, and thank you for your support.
Let's jump into our interview with Major Tom Schumann, who wrote Always Faithful about his efforts to get his interpreter out of Afghanistan about a year ago at the time of the fall. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Major Tom Schumann, United States Marine. Welcome, Tom, to Veterans Radio.
Sir, thanks for having me.
Well, Major, it is an honor to actually have you here. We're going to talk about your background a little bit, what you're doing currently, but we want to talk about your book, Always Faithful, that has just come out, talking about your relationship with your interpreter in Afghanistan and all the efforts that it took to get him into the United States, him and his family into the United States. So I think Always Faithful, which is one chapter written by the major, one chapter written by the interpreter, is a fascinating read. It really paints a great picture. So, Major, help me out. What is the interpreter's proper pronunciation of his name?
So we just call him Zach, but Zanula Zaki is his full name. All the interpreters kind of picked up a nickname at some point, and you know, Zaki just became Zach, and so we've always called him Zach.
And that's what I'm going to refer to him as. He's currently in Texas with his family, working in the construction field. But we'll talk a little bit more about that progress to get here. But let's start with this, Major. How did a nice kid like you from Chicago, who describes his mother as a hippie turned cop, end up in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, there's this idea of a rational call to service, and I did not grow up playing with G.I. Joes or watching, you know, Apocalypse Now or anything like that. You know, I wasn't don't have a rich family history of service, and really never crossed my mind until I was a sophomore in high school, and then it all of a sudden did. Service, when 9/11 happened, I knew I would serve. At that point, if you asked me what were the branches of service, I probably couldn't have told you all the branches. I could have probably said there's an Army and Navy and maybe an Air Force. That's where that seed was planted. I also felt a sense of civic duty in that my mom never graduated high school, and she worked really hard and made some significant sacrifices and provided me opportunities that she could have never afforded for herself. And I think there's something special about that in this country, that through some hard work and through some sacrifice, you can pass something on to the next generation. And so I wanted to pay into that. So maybe a little bit of a lot of it in 9/11 and a little bit of sense of civic duty to pay into something. How did I end up in the Marines? I went to a little ROTC boot camp week, and I saw the sailors and I saw the Marines, and I said, I like those guys better. that's how I ended up being a Marine.
Well, it's somewhat, as I often find in talking to guys, happens this way, in that you now have you have a master's in English literature from Georgetown University, and what are you doing now? You're teaching at the U.S. Naval Academy. Who would have thought this service you went into would have had you end up there?
Yeah, they say, you know, grunts or whatever, crayons. I don't like all those kind of I think those are false reads on the status of Marines. I think Marines, maybe more than, and I'm obviously biased, but any other service, really puts a premium on education. And after Georgetown and after teaching at the Naval Academy, the Marine Corps just sent me to another graduate program at the Naval War College, where I studied national defense and security. So the Marine Corps sent me to three different universities to get two different degrees over a four-year period. It's I think the value and the premium of having a lethal mind and developing critical thinkers is a high priority in the Corps. But it's definitely not something I could have ever, you know, in 2010 when I was in Sangin, if you said, do you think someday you'll be a literature teacher at the Naval Academy, I would have looked at you like you're crazy. But that's what happened.
Well, and who would have thought you would have ever been an author of a book? And the way this is constructed is sort of chapter by chapter. The major writes one, Zach writes one. And so when you're telling the audience about your growing up in Chicago, Zach is telling the audience in his chapter about growing up in Afghanistan. And So you get this very, in my mind, very eye-opening view of what Afghanistan was like in years before Americans were there, when the Russians were there. As you went back and forth and ping-ponged these chapters, Major, was that sort of eye-opening and surprising for you as well?
The alternating narrative structure of the story, I think, is critical and central. And you know, I would have never written a book without Zach. I don't think you know the world needed another guy who spent a year or two in Afghanistan to tell you what Afghanistan was all about. I always felt convicted that we needed to have Zach's voice in this, and fortunately, we had a publisher that supported that idea. I spent 17 months in Afghanistan. I know just a little bit about it, a little bit about the people, a little bit about the culture, but I have friends that I made there who were born there. And so I've had an opportunity over the last decade to learn a little bit more about the country, but undoubtedly Zach's writing and chapters were illuminating to me. And I didn't know many of the stories that he shares in his chapter. So it was definitely eye-opening as he and I collaborated on the book.
Well, and that's why one of the reasons I would recommend this to the Veteran Radio listeners, I told the Major before we get on that this was one of my top two favorite books of the year. And this getting Zach's view of Afghanistan before, while the Russians were there and before the Americans get there and while the Americans get there, and why he makes the choices he makes to serve. Tom just explained why he made some decisions to serve. But tell us a little bit about why Zach decided to serve as an interpreter for the Americans.
Yeah, Zach felt that he wanted to see a prosperous and more free Afghanistan. Zach's family is, you know, valued education, valued, you know, some of the freedoms that they have. And they felt that the Taliban was a oppressive, restrictive regime. And he saw America as a country that was in fact there to help the Afghanistan people. And he, just like anybody's kind of call to service, he felt like, hey, I have a civic duty to improve my country, and this is the best means of doing that is to become allies with the U.S. forces. And so, yeah, I mean, everybody's trying to make the place and their future a little bit brighter for their kids, for their family, and Zach saw that maybe joining with the coalition was how he can contribute.
Yeah, you really got that sense in reading his chapters, and as I say, it sort of mirrored some of the things in a different way that, you know, hey, I'm serving for this reason, he's serving for that reason. But you find yourself in Afghanistan in the Helmand River Valley in 2010 in really some horrific times, and you were with the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, affectionately known as the Dark Horse Battalion. And unfortunately, 25 Marines died during that period, and a couple of hundred were wounded. So you were really in the crucible here. And Zach becomes your interpreter, and a brotherhood or a bondship really develops that each of you talk about in your respective chapters. Can you talk a little bit about that bond that developed between you and Zach as an interpreter, but really much more?
Sure. Most, I went back to Afghanistan with recon and as a JTAC and as an advisor. So I've worked with dozens of interpreters, and most of them do their job and they translate, you know, and that's fine. That's what they're paid to do. They're paid to translate. Whereas Zach was never there just to translate. He could, and he could do that job well, but he was, you know, when we had guys who were wounded, he was going to pick up a rifle. When he heard the Taliban coordinating ambush, he sprints across a minefield and tackles the guy who's about to initiate the ambush. And Zach also became just a kind of a confidant of mine in that you can't gripe down. You know, you can't pass on your anxieties or your stresses as a commander down to your troops. You can only kind of send those messages up. And there wasn't really a whole, everybody was really kind of struggling with all the same stuff. And so Zach became a person who I can kind of confide in and was able to kind of console me and really, he pretty quickly went from, you know, being our translator, to being one of us and to kind of, absolutely being one of the Marines and part of the Brotherhood.
Well, and I think we all know that two people can observe the same event and have a much different story about that event. And again, in these chapter by chapter analysis, it's really riveting and very informative to get your view of a particular event in Afghanistan and then get Zach's view. And he's always approaching it also with that love of country that you mentioned, that you know, Afghanistan is really his home, and he has a bias in favor of what's going on and how beautiful the country is. I have to imagine that your conversations with Zach as you were building the relationship touched on all of these areas, not just the horrors of war, but culture and the nature and the beauty of Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk to Zach about his home province of Kunar, I mean, he talks about, I mean, think of your favorite place in this country or your favorite memories. And I mean, he doesn't talk about Afghanistan like the general perception of Afghanistan as a war-torn or what. I mean, he talks of it very fondly. And you know, the fall of Afghanistan, he and I did an interview recently, and I hadn't heard him say this, but he said that was the worst day of my life. And that really hit me. And I mean, this is a guy who loved his country, loves his culture, loved where he grew up, and was proud of where he grew up. And, you know, you can get him talking about Kunar River and going fishing there and going to get ice cream and like, you know, all the kind of things that we admired and had fun during while we grew up. And it is devastating to think of where that country's at now and the poverty and the abject kind of oppression that's occurring. So yeah, it's tough.
Well, and that's what you get out of the book, Always Faithful, which is out now under the William Morrow imprint. It is that getting a native Afghan's view along with this Marine military officer's view that I think that makes the book so fascinating to read and quick to read. But you left Zach as the interpreter for your unit back in, I think it was about 2010. And it's now another decade before the fall of Afghanistan and the plight of Zach and his wife and his kids. That is the, you know, back third, if you will, of the book. Did you have communication with him during that decade period?
Yeah, I mean, I was back in Afghanistan fighting a year later. He went and started to support different Army SF units and some CAA guys in his province. And so we were both pretty busy still working in the war. But we stayed friends through Facebook. And then about 2014-15 time frame, we really started kind of talking almost every week. And then 2015 is when he started to approach me about applying for a special immigration visa, and we spent the next 6 years working on that visa application. So yeah, we always maintain communication, maintain friendship. You know, we during this period we became husbands and dads, and so we would always talk about family and how things are going, but there was always the very underlying, you know, stress that Zach was being persecuted and he was being hunted and by the Taliban for his service to the U.S. And so that was always something that would bubble up in our conversations, is that reality, as we tried to do what we could to move his visa application along over a very, very long period.
And that's explained in the book in concrete terms about the messages that were left and you know, things that happened at his house that were attributable to the Taliban, that we know who you are, we know what you did, we know where you live. That was sort of the message, wasn't it?
Correct. I mean, in the, yes, like you said, it's in no uncertain terms, they're leaving night letters at his father's house saying, we're hunting for you, and when we find you, we're going to kill you. And, you know, the thing about Zach Service is not only was he so heroic when he was allied with us, he was then persecuted to the point that he couldn't leave his village. I mean, after the army left Kunar in 2014, he could not leave his village without fear of being murdered, and he couldn't work anymore without fear of being killed. And that is a I can't imagine what that stress must feel like to be under constant persecution for something that you did that was noble and virtuous. And that was a very real threat.
Well, as you mentioned, it took 6 years to work on a visa to get him and his family ultimately out of Afghanistan. And during that whole period, these threats were going on. And obviously, we get to the fall, the summer of 2021. And the U.S., beginning in the spring, is talking about we're pulling out. How did that ramp up your anxiety and stress and his about are we going to be able to pull this off? And talk to us a little bit about how the hell did you pull it off?
It's a simple message. When the president made the announcement, I said, what does that mean to you that we'll be gone in a couple months? And he said, I will certainly be killed by the Taliban. And I said, okay. Well, I'm going to get to work. And so I started I had a decent social media following. And so I started a guerrilla marketing campaign, and I just put an appeal out there. And I said, hey, it was a 1-minute video. I just said, here's Zach. Here's what we've been working on trying to get his visa. And here's the threat. Like, if you think you can help, let me know. And it caught fire and it built momentum. And there's no shortage of people who wanted to help. Everybody from Senator Durbin talking to Secretary Blinken during his confirmation hearing about Zach, Secretary Blinken saying that he was going to make sure that that was all taken care of, you know. So when you got the Secretary of State saying we're on it, you know, we land on the New York Times front cover, we're on primetime TV, and all these people are all throwing their weight behind this. And so we feel like, even though the situation is desperate and Zach had to flee Kunar to Kabul, and that things in Kabul are very touch and go, and then over, you know, within hours, the Taliban Kabul collapses and the government. And so we really had this sense of urgency, but we keep kind of thinking that the system is maybe going to come through, that the system might still deliver what it promised. And, after three very harrowing attempts of getting him through the gate at the airport, on the third attempt, it just took a personal friend of mine who I'd met at basic training, and he jumped the wall and grabbed Zach and his family. But each attempt was dramatic and dangerous, and people were killed all around them each time. And he's got four little kids that are all under the age of six, and to be dragging his kids into this environment every time, and it was a ton of courage by his children, a ton of courage by his wife, and just total resolve and resiliency by Zach to kind of see this through. And then a couple of great Americans out there holding the line, 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines, 1st Battalion, 8th Marines, holding the line in this impossible situation. And then a friend of mine, Jared, who ended up being an Air Force pilot, and he's the one that goes in and plucks him out. So I wish we didn't have a dramatic, you know, ending. I wish it was just, hey, your paperwork got approved and you got on a flight and everything was, you know, but it's not how it turned out. And the system never delivered. And it was through just a lot of through personal heroism and courage that we were able to get Zach out.
Well, and fortuitous, you happen to know somebody standing at the gate. If you couldn't have placed that phone call and gotten the right guy in the right spot, the third attempt might not have worked.
He would not have gotten out. He would have been like the other 90-something% of SIV applicants who did not get out.
You can hear the rest of this interview on veteransradio.net and the podcast. We go on for another 15 or 20 minutes talking about some of his views on the fall of Afghanistan. It's a great book, Always Faithful by Major Tom Schuman, S-C-H-U-E-M-A-N, and his interpreter, Zach. I really recommend it to you. A few words from our sponsors, and then we'll move on to some Michigan military history.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
A friend of Veterans Radio is offering a free complimentary career coaching sessions in honor of Veterans Day, so you can nominate a veteran who will then get awarded 3 complimentary career coaching sessions and the Gallup Strength Assessment Survey. Go to epiphanyccc.com to nominate a veteran. That's epiphany, epiphanyccc.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio Paul J. Ryan, who's going to talk about the upcoming Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor induction ceremony for 2022. Paul, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. We had you on last year to talk about last year's classes, and Paul Ryan is a retired United States Navy captain, and he's the vice chair of the board for the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. So he's a busy, busy guy, and he's taken on the lead here to induct a whole new class of great Michiganders into the hall this November. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, and we'll start there.
Sure, Jim. The Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, we'll keep it short to Hall of Honor, has only been around for a few years. Our purpose is to not only recognize Michiganders for either their military exploits or civilian achievements, civic, business, professional, education, nonprofit accomplishments after they took the uniform off. We recognize selected individuals in an induction ceremony. This year will be held in November 18th, at the Michigan History Center in Lansing. But beyond that, our goal is to educate the public, and particularly Michigan youth, about these individuals, and in so doing, help to encourage, if you will, a sense of civic pride in our country, in our state, and in its citizens.
And if I understand it right, Paul, these folks can be nominated by the public. They're nominated by members of the board. They may be a VSO or somebody has nominated. Maybe a family friend has nominated. So it's really a wide open process, isn't it?
Oh, yes. And the nomination documents and the information for members of the public to nominate individuals for this honor are on the Hall of Honor's website. If memory serves me, we have multiple nominations from we did have multiple nominations from the public, about 6 or 7 of them. And of those, I believe two actually are going in this year as inductees.
The website, by the way, is MI Military Vet Hall of Honor.org. And you can go there and find the bios of everybody who's been inducted in 2019, 2020, 2021. And we're going to talk about the 2022 inductees in a minute here. But I wanted to set up how folks can learn more about the Hall of Honor and that website, MIMilitaryVetHallOfHonor.org. Now we're going to turn to the veteran category. And Paul Ryan, for the veteran category, and who are the six inductees for 2022 that will be part of the November 18th ceremony up in Lansing?
Yeah, well, every inductee has to have served in the armed forces. And the veteran category individuals are recognized probably not so much for what they did while they were in military service, although many of them have very interesting stories and accomplishments while they were in uniform. But the veteran category is more directed towards what these individuals accomplished, what they did after they left the military. And this year, we have another really fantastic slate of inductees, including these six individuals, Travis Mills, Herman Kaiser, Coleman Young. People will remember that name. Ralph Hauenstein, Jerry Lineger, and Tom Skerritt, interestingly enough, the Hollywood actor.
Again, a pretty diverse group. They've all had different types of lives, but giving real weight to helping veterans and veteran causes, military causes. So it's great to talk to Captain Paul Ryan, retired of the United States Navy, vice chair of the board of the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, about these veteran inductees. Paul, why don't you tell us about Herman Kaiser?
Sure. Herm Kaiser was born in 1938 in Grand Rapids. He enlisted in the Army as a chaplain assistant in 1962 and was commissioned as an Army chaplain in 1968. He served in Vietnam with both the 1st Infantry Division and the 4th Infantry Division, was wounded twice, once in a rocket attack on a fire base in Cambodia, actually, for which he received the Purple Heart. And the second time, he was injured as a result of a 150-foot free fall from a helicopter.
God was looking after him on that one.
Should have killed him, but it didn't. And the reason it didn't was he landed in a pile of very thick, tall grass and it broke his fall. But he was pretty badly banged up from that. Herm exhibited his own degree of bravery, particularly in one occasion where he persuaded an intoxicated soldier who was armed and threatened to shoot his other fellow soldiers. Herm convinced this guy to surrender his weapons and defused a pretty dangerous and dicey situation. Herm received the Army's Soldier's Medal for that act. The Soldier's Medal is given for heroism not involving actual combat. Herm had a long career in the Army, positions of great responsibility in the chaplain's field, the deputy director of chaplaincy, service support agency in Washington, the executive director of the Armed Forces Chaplains Board for the Department of Defense. He was the senior command chaplain for NATO in Germany for a number of years. Herm retired from the Army in 1998 as a colonel, but was recalled to active duty by the Secretary of the Army to serve in a role supporting the reporting directly to the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. His recall was extended in 2000 by the Secretary of Defense to serve as an advisor to the ambassador at large for international religious freedom at the U.S. Department of State. So, Herm's expertise and experience so significant that the Army chose to detail him to this lead role in the Department of State. Herm did finally retire from the Army in 2002.
It really is another one of these where you go, well, geez, he could be in the military category, but he did so much for the Army and the Chaplain Corps post-active duty. It's very interesting.
Yeah, Herm dedicated his life both in and particularly out of uniform to increase the awareness of moral injury in war and veterans suffering from it. He was the founding co-director of an organization called the Soul Repair Center at Texas Christian University, which has become a very important source of informational materials stressing both the physical and the psychological aspects of post-traumatic stress, and a number of other boards and commissions. He briefed the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness three separate times on just war tradition and the need to change the conscientious objector policy in the armed forces. He also served as the national chaplain for the Military Order of the Purple Heart. He was a member. There are 45,000 other fellow members of the Purple Heart organization, and he was their national chaplain. And he held that role at the time of his death.
Well, he really continued his service to the community and to veterans by things that he did. I have a note here that he played a key role in establishing Hidden Wounds of War, a conference at Grand Valley State University in 2014, and continued on as a special counselor to the Kent County Veterans Treatment Court when it was established in 2015. So this is a man of faith, a man who served and certainly had very strong views about how to help folks, how to help other folks who had served.
He was very articulate and very knowledgeable, very active right up until his death in 2017 at age 79. Herm is buried in Arlington National Cemetery, and that's not easy to do. I mean, you have to qualify for that. It sounds a little odd, but not everybody gets to be buried there, and Herm is one of them.
Well, again, a very interesting life story that deservedly is in the Hall of Honor. But another gentleman who fits that category would be Travis Mills. Tell us about Travis.
Yeah, Travis Mills is an Army veteran born in 1987 in Vassar, which is east of Saginaw, although Travis now lives in Maine. He enlisted in the Army in 2006 and served with the 82nd Airborne Division. During his third combat tour in Afghanistan in 2012, all four of Travis's limbs sustained severe injuries from an IED explosion. As a result, Travis became a quadruple amputee and was medically retired from the Army. He is only one of five quadruple amputees from the Global War on Terror to survive such wounds. Just absolutely unbelievable injuries that he suffered. After he was wounded, Travis made it his personal goal to recover and be able to stand at what's known as the green ramp to welcome the 82nd Airborne back from that particular deployment on which during which he was injured. And he actually did that. The green ramp is a large north-south parking ramp at Pope Air Force Base in North Carolina and used by the Army to stage joint operations for the Air Force. So doesn't mean much to me to Army guy. Travis committed himself to recovering sufficiently to be there, and he was. He went on to write a New York Times selling memoir titled Tough as They Come. Here's another example, Jim, of an individual who faced catastrophic adversity, physical adversity, and overcame it, not only survived, but thrived. He founded and is the board president of the Travis Mills Foundation. That foundation raised almost $3 million in donations to rehabilitate a facility called Elizabeth Arden's Maine, M-A-I-N-E, Chance Lodge. That used to be a spa that was established in the 30s by the cosmetic maven business leader, businesswoman Elizabeth Arden, was sold in 1970. Travis, with his donations, went in, acquired it, rehabilitated it, and last year, or rather in 2017, this now veterans retreat hosted over 56 combat injured veterans and their families. Just an incredible story.
Yeah, and I would recommend to anybody who is you know, a little depressed about their life or a little down in the dumps and grumpy about, you know, somebody took my parking spot or I didn't get the job or, you know, the Army didn't treat me or the VA didn't treat me fairly. Go read Tough as They Come. When you hear Travis Mills' words and see and understand what he went through, boy, the rest of us have nothing to complain about. And he's, he really is an inspiration, sort of a motion picture inspiration, isn't he?
Yeah, I'd say the key to life is to maintain perspective. And I think Travis's story will put a lot of our trials and tribulations into perspective. And it is pretty interesting that his story is set to be the subject of a major film expected to be directed by Sylvester Stallone, none other than the Italian Stallion. And he is expected to co-star in it along with Adam Driver, who incidentally is a Marine Corps veteran himself.
Well, Travis's story is amazing. Again, well worthy of the Hall of Honor that's being bestowed on him here in Michigan. So glad to see his story advanced and in his rightful place with all these other great Michiganders. But let's do a final one here in the veterans category. And sometimes they're politicians. I know in the past inductees have included congressmen and U.S. senators and judges because the military really becomes a launching point for a greater career afterwards. And the next one up to talk about is Coleman Young, who I think certainly did that.
Yeah, and that's certainly true. Your comment about launching grounds for bigger and better things. Coleman was born in 1918, right in Detroit. During World War II, he served in the Army Air Forces. He was a Tuskegee Airman, served as a bombardier and a navigator with the 477th Medium Bomber Group. There was an event that occurred in 1945 toward the end of the war called the Freeman Field Mutiny. This was a series of incidents at Freeman Army Airfield, which is a base in Indiana. African-American members of the 477th attempted to integrate an all-white officers club. And that attempt got some very serious pushback by Army authorities. These incidents resulted in over 160 arrests of black officers from the 477th. Some of them were arrested twice. Three were court-martialed on relatively minor charges, and one was convicted. A huge injustice, racial discrimination against members of the armed forces who are fighting to protect our way of life, and they get treated like this. Finally, in 1995, the Air Force officially vindicated all these actions and reversed the conviction and expunged negative reports from the letters of that from the files of some of these officers. So the wrong was eventually righted. It's interesting that this incident, the Freeman Field Mutiny, is generally recognized by historians of the civil rights movement as an important step towards the full integration of the armed forces that occurred in 1948.
Well, it's nice to see that the board for the Hall of Honors, recognizing some of these wrongs that have been righted, whether it be Olita Christides, a woman in World War One who didn't get treated the right way, or Virgil Nishimura Westdale, a Nisi, who didn't get treated the right way in World War II, and in this instance, an African-American officer, Coleman Young, who went on to really launch a political career and dynasty. Tell any of our listeners who may not understand that Coleman Young was the mayor of Detroit and some of the things that he did. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Coleman Young was the first African-American mayor of Detroit and served for 20 years, 1974 to 1994. And during his administration, there was really, the face of Detroit. I don't think it's an overstatement to say the face of Detroit was transformed.
Yeah, and you can really draw the dots between his public service as a Tuskegee Airman, recognizing the segregation that was going on and wanting to right that while in service, and then that same public service and righting wrongs through his 20 years as mayor of Detroit. We're talking to Captain Paul Ryan, retired United States Navy and vice chair of the Michigan and Veterans Hall of Honor, which has its upcoming ceremony inducting folks in both from the military category and the veterans category. And what's the date of that ceremony again, Paul?
Jim, this year's induction ceremony will be on Friday, November 18th. The ceremony begins at 12:30 p.m. at the Michigan History Center in Lansing.
Yeah, and you can go to MIMilitaryVetHallOfHonor.org to get more information, both on previous inductees, but also on this particular ceremony, which, as Paul mentioned, starts at 12:30 at 702 Kalamazoo Street in Lansing, Michigan. It's always a very dignified affair and quite impressive to learn about all of the members who are being inducted. Paul, thank you for spending some time with Veterans Radio and telling our listeners about the great work that you and the board are doing to bring these people forward and keep this history alive.
Well, thank you for having me, Jim. Speaking on behalf of the board of the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, we absolutely love sharing these stories with the public. And we can't wait to be with members of the public, with you all, November 18th, so you can hear firsthand the great things that these inductees have accomplished.
Thanks for your time today, Paul.
Thank you.
Here's another example of a nonprofit working hard to support and educate Michiganders about the efforts undertaken by members of this state to support the military and support the country. So hope you enjoyed getting a little history from the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, and check out their induction ceremony on their website. We couldn't bring these kind of stories to you without the help of friends like Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter 310 in Ann Arbor, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in American Irwin Preskin Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. It's important to get support from our listening public. We have national support from nvbdc.org and legalhelpforveterans.com. So we would like you to go to veteransradio.net and click on that. You'll see some podcasts, new podcasts every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. and other information. Check us out on Facebook. But we've tried to make it pretty easy for you to go to our website, click on it, and support us. The most recent opportunity we talked about earlier with Kate Melcher, who's on the board of Veterans Radio America, a 501c3 charity, Radio on the River, September 25th. You can go to that website, veteransradio.net, and go ahead and click on that Radio on the River banner. It's right up top so that you can buy a ticket, show up, maybe sponsor, maybe donate your ticket, or maybe just make a donation to the cause so that we can continue to spread the message about what we're doing. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Major Tom Schumann. I want to really encourage folks to go read the book, Always Faithful. The chapters by Zach, the Afghan interpreter, are fascinating because they really give you an insight into what Afghanistan was to Afghanis, the beautiful country, the culture, before all the intolerance of the Taliban and those kinds of problems. He chronicles it from the time the Russians were there all the way through our period. So, once again, the hour's gone fast. We appreciate you listening in, as always, here on Veterans Radio. Next week, Dale will be back with another fascinating story or two about veterans and their service. And I'm Jim Fossone. I'm glad to be on the air with you once again. And until next time on Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.